Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. For those of you just joining us, I think you missed an amazing interview with Yves Mongar, the chairman and chief executive officer of Nestlé Middle East. He talked about how you really need to almost program your brain for success and how you need to change the way you think about your profession, about your business, about your career, about yourself, if you really want to rise to that top 5% of what you do. But right now we have someone who has a different career path. I think Yves took the institutional path and worked his way up to the top of one of the biggest multinationals in the world. We have another gentleman here who took the entrepreneurial path, who had the fires of entrepreneurial passion heating his spirit along the way. His name is Peter Davos. He is the founder and managing director of Carrion College Advisors, an educational consultancy that focuses exclusively on U.S. university admissions. Peter, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you, Shane. I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no. Thank you so much for calling in. It's a pleasure to have you on here. And I always have a respect for those individuals who chase their dreams. And do you have us on a speakerphone?
No, I don't. I'm on the handset.
Yeah. Okay, there's a little bit of an echo, I guess, for some reason. But can you just tell us a little bit about what your business does?
Sure, absolutely. I have an office that helps students based in the GCC prepare for and apply to American universities.
Okay, great. So what made you, I mean, because you, I didn't talk about it, but you're actually highly educated yourself. You have an undergraduate study at Johns Hopkins, which is debatably one of the top schools in the U.S., and the London School of Economics, and we went, and then went on to complete master's degrees at Oxford and Harvard. Graduating first in your class from the latter. So, you know, you could probably go work wherever you wanted to. You did not have to throw yourself into the, you know, the choppy seas of entrepreneurship.
What, yes.
What was it that drove you that?
Well, to be honest with you, it's really bringing together two passions that I have. One is for education. As you stated, you know, I had the good fortune to have the opportunity to be educated. Neither of my parents went to college, so I knew how fortunate I was to have that opportunity. So I took full advantage of it and worked really, really hard to be the best possible student that I could be. And then after having worked, you know, for companies for a while, I saved my money, and I wanted to pursue my other passion, which was business. So now I'm really honestly living my dream, helping people. I you know, the work that I do and that our team does is fantastic, and we get a lot of satisfaction seeing our students grow. So to be able to bring those two things together is really something I couldn't ask for more.
Do you have the radio on, or maybe the monitor or computer that you're playing the show on? Because we're getting a feedback.
No, it's not on. I am nowhere near
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Okay, so do you think that people need to find that value in what they're doing, that why you're doing what you do? Is that, you think, one of the critical success factors that people need to find if they want to really hit stride in their careers?
Absolutely. I think passion is everything. I mean, if you don't have that drive, that's something that can't be taught. And that's something actually we see in a lot of our students. You know, quite a few of them might have good grades. They might even have excellent SAT scores. But not a lot of them have an ingrained intellectual curiosity to go above and beyond and to really explore. So if you're looking to obviously get into one of the top schools or succeed in business, you have to have that relentless drive to actually be the best. And I don't think that's something that you can teach.
Well, you just said one of the magic words to me, which is intellectual curiosity. And when we are doing a search for a CEO or a CFO or for a senior executive, we always look for that intellectual curiosity. Are you striving to find new information about your profession, about your job, about the industry in general? Or are you basically just doing barely enough not to get fired? Yeah, so intellectual curiosity, whether you're a student or a senior executive, I think is really critical. And I don't know why so many people don't follow that. But again, why don't we just get back to, you know, what you do, Carrion College Advisors. What kind of trends are you seeing? Because basically you're helping people from the GCC get acceptance into American schools. What kind of trends or insights do you have that you've seen over the last while?
Well, you're seeing an increasing appetite for American education from students from all different types of curriculum schools. So in 2008, the UK, for example, the UK universities tripled their fees for overseas students. So Britain was traditionally one of the top destinations. It still is for students coming from abroad to pursue their undergraduate studies.
Sorry, they tripled their fees?
Absolutely.
England did, or who did this?
Yes, the UK, absolutely.
Yes. Wow.
Because in the UK you have a government-funded system. The universities are funded primarily from the government. We had the financial crisis. Funding obviously took a big hit. Budgets had to be cut. Whereas in the US, the universities are funded by private endowments. They're primarily funded by alumni donations. And there are a lot more wealthier universities in the US. 76 of them have an endowment of $1 billion or more, while in the UK, only Oxford has an endowment of $1 billion or more.
Wow.
The US universities were able to weather the financial crisis a bit better, especially the private schools. And also, because of their wealth, the U.S. universities are able to offer more aid to their students. So, for example, if you are fortunate enough to get into Harvard, and if your family makes less than $65,000 per year, your family will pay absolutely nothing. Nothing for tuition, books, accommodation, nothing. And if your family makes $130,000 a year or less, then they're only going to pay 10% of their annual income in tuition. So if you are able to get into a top school, and even if you don't have the financial means, they will essentially subsidize your cost of education.
Wow. So you basically went to Harvard for free.
No, I wish I did. I actually graduated with over $100,000 in student loans, but I paid them back in 2 years, so I was pretty fortunate there. But no, I went to grad school for Harvard. I did receive quite a few scholarships, but they didn't cover the whole cost of tuition.
With all your scholarships, still 100 grand. That's crazy. That's expensive, right? But I guess it's worth it, right? So what effect do you think a U.S. education will really have on the career path of any of these students who are thinking, you know, should I go to American University in Sharjah, or should I go to, you know, MIT or something? I don't know.
It's very different. A U.S. education, first of all, when you study abroad, wherever it is, it's an education in and of itself. You know, a lot of students from this part of the world, you know, obviously they're very, they live very comfortable lifestyles, and they should be challenged a little bit. So coming out of their shell and becoming more independent, that's an education in and of itself. But a U.S. education in the States specifically is going to prepare you for life. It's not just about tuition. It's about development of the individual. That's through extracurricular activities. That's through internships, speaker series, classroom discussions, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a much greater emphasis on holistic development, not simply tuition of a particular subject.
Are some of the American schools going down in popularity as we now see globalization take hold, that people are looking now for programs that have international exposure, where they work in campuses in China, in the Middle East, in Europe, whereas the American campuses may be more ethnocentric, not really giving us that spread? I mean, are some of these legacy Ivy League schools perhaps at a disadvantage as we move into the 21st century, as cultural agility becomes more of a theme?
I would disagree there. I think every single year you see the international student numbers at U.S. universities shooting upwards. And if you look at trends at the Ivy League schools, you know, they're becoming increasingly more internationalized. So if you look, you know, every single year, a higher proportion of students at every university, I mean, at University of Washington now, 10% of the students there are actually from China, believe it or not. So, again, in the U.S., because of the financial crisis with the public universities particularly, they've had to look to international students to fill their seats to basically subsidize the cost of American students who are on financial aid. So U.S. campuses are becoming increasingly more international.
So from what you're seeing, the American branded education has cemented its seat at the podium. But on the other hand, we're seeing, you know, South Asian brands like Indian Institute of Management or some of these other just climbing up the league tables. Are they being challenged from some of these international schools at all?
I wouldn't say no, not seriously. Of course, every country is going to have one institution, maybe two, possibly three or four if you're looking at the UK, that are going to be world-class on par. But it's also a question of resources. How do you compete with a Harvard, which has an endowment of $32 billion?
Wow.
That endowment's not going away.
Right. So no finance, no romance, comes down to the money factor, and the Americans just have the firepower to hold and, you know, basically wipe out any kind of competition. So that's crazy. Harvard has $32 billion, and the UK only has one school with over $1 billion endowment. Wow.
That's correct. And if you look at the legacy and the culture of donations, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who also went to Hopkins, he's an alum, he himself has donated $1.1 billion, with a B, U.S. dollars to Johns Hopkins. That exceeds the largest endowment of the wealthiest Canadian or Australian university. So that one individual, think about the impact that he's made on that university, and he's just one guy.
That's amazing. So, and again, I think when you look at it, you know, the Americans are really setting the tone. They have the largest GDP. They have the most millionaires. Someone who's serious about business, in your suggestion, should get an American education.
Absolutely. If you want the best, you got to go to the States.
Okay. Do you work for the embassy at all, or you're?
No, I'm just a believer in what I do.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Do you have any last advice for anybody who's out there trying to take a stab at getting into one of these iconic schools like Harvard?
Well, just prepare early. Prepare in early as advanced as possible, and be prepared to work very, very, very hard, and hopefully get a little bit lucky as well, because that's going to play a role.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Peter, and best of luck to you and your business.
Thanks a lot, Shane. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Peter Davos. He is the founder and managing director of Carrion College Advisors, an educational consultancy that focuses exclusively on U.S. university admissions. But coming up, we are going to be talking to the general manager of Dun & Bradstreet, one of the world's leading sources for business information and insight. And we'll be talking about how he got to the top spot and his lessons learned on the road to the top. So stay with us.